And we're back at Boot Camp, the favorite camp that we have here. I am your host, Tim Camaraj, at Footy Coogee on Twitter, always with my co-host, Marcin Kazmarski. Say what's up, Marcin.
Hey, what's going on? You guys can always follow me at PLUventino on Twitter. What's up?
So, Marcin, of course, we are always privileged to have super cool guests on, and these men are no exception to that. We have Jay. Jay, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
What's up, everyone? I'm Jay. You can find me at No Such Person La on Instagram. And I write for Boot Hype, which is a football equipment website. So we review football boots, jerseys, boot equipment, as well as some of the more social stuff along based in Singapore, as well as a little bit of Asia. And yeah, that's about it.
Right on, right on. And then last but certainly not least, we have the man from Glasgow. We have the legend himself. We have Aiden over there. So why don't you say what's up to everybody?
What's up? Yeah, I'm Aiden. I run AOF Cleats, where I kind of, you know, focus on the photography of football boots, I guess. But yeah, I'm a product design student through the weekend, a boot enthusiast after 5 p.m.
So, carrying on, we always do part one of this episode is always going to be getting to know the guests that we have on the show, because it sounds tacky to say that it's a privilege to have everybody here, but you know, people who are passionate about what they do are always amazing to talk to. So that's what we got to focus on. So Jay, we are going to start with you. You mentioned writing for Boot Hype, and you are a aficionado when it comes to for your boots, right? So you know, that's really interesting. What drives you to write, and what are your plans for the future? Maybe for your page, do you want to go more social media? Do you want to get into more articles? Do you, you know, what's your focus? What are you trying to do with this?
Mm-hmm. So just a little bit of background myself. So I did a comms degree in communications. I've always had an interest in a bit of sociology as well as marketing, right? And so why, when I first started writing, it was really more to educate people to some extent in terms of boots, because I mean, these days with the amount of marketing that's out there, right, it's really difficult for people to tell what's good about certain boot or what's not so good about certain boot, and even things that we take for granted these days. I think that there's a lot of misdirection or from brands to sort of lead you away. So I think the biggest culprit, as we all know, is the whole boot by position thing, right? I think that was like a brilliant masterstroke from Nike, but because of that, it's kind of confused a lot of people, right? Do you really need to wear a Vapor if you're a striker? Maybe, maybe not, but really it comes down to what sort of boot you like. You know, do you like a tighter boot, that sort of thing. So that's how I really got started with writing. When I first spoke to Hata, who's the editor and the guy who runs the website. And my point to him was simple. You know, I just want to educate people to make the best possible decision wherever you spend your hard-earned money on boots. In terms of the future, I genuinely have no idea, because I started this out.
At least he's honest.
Yeah. Very honest. I started this out for fun, right? Like, you know, and like I have friends who ask me about boots. I used to coach in a school. So I had kids from 17 to 18, and I'll be giving them advice about boots, you know, where to get the best deals. Boot Hype recently, we launched our new deals page. So on top of educating people, I wouldn't say educate, giving people more information about boots they buy, we are now also giving them the best places to get their boots, in a way, you know, to get the best possible deals.
So you know, when it comes down to it, you're like, I don't know what I want to do, but here I am just helping people and being a good person. So I mean, that's fine. You know, you don't have to know what you're going to do, but as long as you're helping people, that's the important part. So this kind of leads to our next question. What does football mean to you? What do you get out of football and your relationship with it?
Oh, right. I think like These are really tough, introspective questions that I've never thought about, guys.
We only ask the hard-hitting questions, and we don't bill for our therapy sessions. So please continue.
Yeah, I think for me, football was really about connecting with a sport, right? Because I grew up as a fat kid, and you know, like when you're a fat kid, you know, it's like
I feel
goalkeeper
that.
straight up, right? And so, football for me has always been about trying to prove to people that you know it's not so much that you know, yeah, sure, athletic ability means something, but hey, just because I'm fat doesn't mean I can't play. So I've always taken it football to be something that I could surprise people, like, hey, that fat kid can do something in a game, right? It's not just there to like just stand there and block shots for us. and I think that really flows through how I look at football. I'm sure you guys have seen some of my disagreements in terms of players in the group chat, because I think I've always had a bit more focus in terms of playing for the team. So whenever I play in the team, I end up as the defensive midfielder, just covering all the spaces for the wingers who go up all the time. And I try to be a bit more tactical playing football in my head rather than, you know, my lack of stamina or lack of speed, let that come into play. But yeah, but I think football, I do hope that, you know, football never loses its roots in terms of being able to connect people everywhere. I think it's a bit sad that in recent times, we are seeing that people still don't, like, while football connects us to some extent, certain, like, tribalism still pops up from time to time. And I do hope that football is able, or sport is able to just destroy, bring down those barriers in the end.
For sure. I mean, the most reassuring thing that you threw out there in that was that I wasn't the only kid that got picked on for being fat when I was little. Kids are cruel across the world, and that's what I picked up from that. So that's good to know for me, at least.
I took care of Tim. So, I got him.
So we look at, speaking about kids across the world, speaking about you having, as far as input and impact into life in Singapore, when you look at that, life in Singapore, it's a relatively small country, but extremely diverse, and you always post about the food there, and it drives me crazy. I love eating everything. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about life in Singapore?
Sure. In all honesty, it's a great time to talk about Singapore right now, because I think a couple of days ago, our prime minister just announced that elections will be coming soon in 2 weeks' time. And this comes shortly after we've sort of lifted lockdown. So there's been a lot of debate, discourse, and there's a period of introspection for everyone in terms of, you know, the direction we've gone as a country. You know, is this where everyone wants to go? Because think of us as more of a city than a country. Like, okay. I've been in New York before, New York City. I've heard stories about London. I think it applies everywhere, right? You have an increasingly stratified society where, you know, the rich get richer and the poor find it hard. There's a lack of social mobility in general, which is not really anyone's fault, right? Because everybody wants their kids to do better. And of course, the rich have better resources to do that. Now, whether or not the government can or should be doing more is a different story. I personally believe that while we can urge the government to do more, we all need to be a bit more, you know, a bit more, have a bit more drive at times. Yeah. So I think in Singapore, what we're seeing right now is that because we're so small and we're all very influenced by the US and the UK, so I think Black Lives Matter kind of hit us as well, made us look again at how we treat the minorities in our countries. And we're all just dealing with a lot of stuff right now in terms of where we want to go for the next 5 years because elections are coming up. But in terms of food, which I think is the less heavy topic. So in short, Singapore's got like sort of like three big races, right? So you've got the Chinese, which is myself. You've got the Malays, and I've got Indians. And that's before I break it down where, you know, Chinese, some of us come from China, some of us have interracial marriages, so there's what we call Peranakan, where Chinese and the Malays have merit and the food in those areas have sort of merged together. And then of course the Malays, you have some of them from the rest of Southeast Asia where there are different amount sorts of food. I think if I were to just blanket and put it across, most of our food is fairly spicy. Most of us like our spicy foods. We're quite carb heavy. Rice or noodles feature very heavily in most of our meals. If any of you come down, I'll be very happy to take you along on a trip around Singapore with all sorts of foods.
Let's go.
Yeah, and I think increasingly we're also seeing influence from, of course, France, you know, with French cuisine. Gordon Ramsay's got a Bread Street Kitchen open in Singapore as well. So I think at one point of time, there were quite a number of beef Wellington Instagram shots on my Instagram as well, which was really interesting. And yeah, so I think despite being a small country, we're seeing lots of influence in terms of food. There's a lot of China influences from China, where I think the same in the US, where you see a lot of all the mala stuff that you wouldn't think would be popular, but that's creeping in. So life in Singapore is really fast paced, but we get lots of good food and they're very cheap as well, because we have what we call hawker centers where you get food for like $2 or $3 and can get a meal for like $4 and something that will fill you up, which I learned when I went over to Buffalo that it's not something that's everywhere in the world.
you're gonna be hard pressed to find that in Buffalo. You are correct, definitely.
Dude, $4 doesn't even pay for a coffee here. Come on, man.
Incredible. Now, so I could talk about food all day. So here's what's gonna happen. Jay and I are gonna take a back seat here, and we'll have Marcin and Aiden. So Aiden, good luck following up. You know, ranging from the cultural movements to interesting cuisines, but gonna go ahead and let Marcin take the lead on this one.
Yeah, so I'm obviously really hyped to have Aiden, because this is kind of something that he's been doing in terms of his football photography, something that I kind of have a little side, like, not passion for, but something I would love to get interest like into, which is awesome for me. So I'm definitely happy to kind of really chat with you for a little bit about what you've been doing. And obviously, like, in our group chat, you definitely have, in my opinion, some of the best and aesthetically pleasing photos that taken of boots. So I definitely give you kudos for taking the time to set up shots. And if you guys don't follow him already, AOF Cleats on Instagram, definitely worth a look. But obviously, the big question that I want to ask you, since you got into design, and design's a big part of what boot culture is essentially nowadays. So yeah, what drove you to decide to open up and start a page where you were kind of showing off your quote unquote designs of football boots?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a funny one. It was never really a plan to start the page. It was something that kind of came by chance. You know, I was kind of searching across the internet one day, and I'd always wanted a pair of Puma V110s in an orange, blue, and white colorway. And I had them when I was younger, and I stumbled across them in Pro Direct. Must have had they must have found dead stock in their store and put them back up because they hadn't been up. And I grabbed them for £25, and it kind of just set me on this journey of, you know, and a kind of weird combination of getting a new camera at the same time and also kind of, you know, developing further into the design world. I wanted to practice things like product photography. So I thought, why not combine, you know, my passion for football boots and see what I can do with, you know, a camera and a football pitch. And it kind of just grew from there. I kind of started to realize there was a small niche in the football boot community where people seem to have amazing collections, but don't know how to show it off right, in my opinion. And I think there's a kind of a small kind of area where we can, you know, these things are beautiful. They're like cars. You know, you wouldn't snap a photo of a Ferrari with a, you know, a potato phone, would you? You know, it's the same thing. I feel the same thing for me is that, you know, these things are, you know, I don't know, like embodiment of design and evolution. If you even look at something like Superfly from 1 to 7, and that's kind of where it started. Was just I wanted to essentially, you know, give them credit is really what what the kind of page started off to be, but it had many versions before. You know, if some photos, if I show you my archive, it's a collection of trial and error until I kind of get what I'm kind of looking for. So yeah, that was kind of how I started off and how it built up.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy looking at your photos. I wish you lived here so that you could take photos for me and Tim, because that would be very clutch.
That's what I need. The sun makes a photo, honestly. You know, it's cloudy here constantly, so every one of my photos looks moody, and I'm begging the sun to come out, but it never does.
Yeah, I'm sure in Glasgow you have your fair share of weird weather.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Obviously, talking about your page, that's a great story of how you kind of came about it. But do you have any kind of idea or plans for the future in terms of what you want to do with the page, or in terms of like design, how you want to run the page like moving forward?
To be honest, you know, I mean, the ideal thing would be is if, you know, I had things like Umbro and Nike and Adidas and Puma, I go, hey, here's a pair of boots, like photograph them, send it out to your 2,500 followers, or you know, I'm just kind of hoping the page grows. I don't like to predict or you know, I don't really know where it'll go. I'm busy quite a lot through my work at uni and design, but yeah, I guess just see where it goes, keep snapping photos. If I can get recognition, you know, I'll happily take it, and yeah, just, you know, enjoy it, I guess, what I'm going to be doing. Just enjoy taking some photos.
Cool. Well, I'm gonna turn this conversation into more of a therapy session now, like how Tim mentioned.
Oh no, I didn't know I was getting in for a shrink session, but let's go. Yeah, let's go.
Last on and everything.
Yeah, every episode we try to do this. So the same question that we asked before: what does football mean to you?
Oh man, so I have been thinking about this, unlike Jason. You know, I thought ahead of time.
The ocean longingly.
You know, I mean, one thing that I kind of thought about was that, I don't know, football to me is almost like just a part of life. You know, it's hard to kind of put into words. It's like, you know, having a dog or you know, getting the coffee in the morning. It just kind of seems to build itself into how we live. You know, it's not something that you think about. I don't think it's something that comes naturally. And I think, you know, it kind of has this weird symbiotic relationship that, you know, it kind of just works alongside life. It's not either, you know, all your life, and it's never just pushed to the back. It's kind of just intertwined. So yeah, that's kind of what I love about it, is that you also can, I don't think any other sport can replicate the feeling of football. I just don't think, I know people will say to me, yeah, but if you're a rugby fan, you know, rugby is, you know, it gives you that feeling, or, you know, if you're American football, but I just think the type of people and the fans, there is some bad that comes out of it. You know, from Glasgow, I've got my fair share of experiences with Glasgow, you know, Rangers and Celtic, but I think there's also, yeah, just something that, you know, brings people together. And yeah, it's just, it's something special. I don't think that you can put words to it. You need to just live it to feel it.
Yeah, I think I can say for all of us here, I think football is engraved in all of us, and it's going to be a part of us until 50, 60 plus years from now. I think we're all going to be yelling at the TV screens while we're watching our favorite clubs play. So I 100% agree with that. I mean, speaking about what we talked about before with our previous guest who didn't know the questions, he was from Singapore. Yeah, I'm throwing some shade. You're obviously from Glasgow. So obviously we touched on a little bit about the weather. So, but I wanted to talk about how it is from in terms of a cultural perspective. Obviously, it's the capital of Scotland. How is it culturally there? Is it like a diverse place, or how is that kind of in relation to how Glasgow is seen as a capital of the country?
Funny thing is, it's actually not the capital. So that's what everyone believes. It's the biggest city in Scotland, but it's not the capital. So Edinburgh is the capital, where it's kind of, Edinburgh's seen as the kind of the rich country, you know, and I'm sorry,
I more meant cultural capital, not like physical capital.
Yeah.
Slick save, Marson. Go ahead.
So that's what I was going to say was, yeah, Glasgow is very different. And yeah, I think Glasgow is kind of one of those rough gems. You know, it's a kind of hidden, it's a hidden gem, but it's a rough hidden gem. You know, it's not something that, I don't know, I would always recommend people, if they're coming to Glasgow, if they're coming to Scotland, come to Glasgow. It's truly one of the best, you know. Okay, Scotland isn't really known for its food. You know, I can't talk about that much compared to Jason. You know, we have haggis and we have pies, and that's really it, you know. Exactly. I mean, if you don't know what haggis is, search it up and you'll probably be scarred for life. But it does taste quite good. But yeah, like you said, weather is awful. It's, you know, just a constant blanket of cloud across our whole country. So no joy there. But yeah, just culturally, it's one of those places that has a very kind of hard exterior. People look at it and think, you know, it's really tough, and it's quite, you know, a lot of the time it's probably looked at being quite poor as well. But, you know, once you come here, you'll start to realize that, you know, people are very different from those you'll find in London or Paris. You know, everyone, I can almost guarantee about 90% of people you walk up to, they'll be happy to give you directions, or, you know, tell you where to go, or how you get to this place, or what's the best place to eat. You know, they're just a very kind of open, and our slogan for Glasgow is people make Glasgow, and it's kind of true. You know, Glasgow wouldn't be what it is without its people. So yeah, I think, yeah, it's rough, but it has its you know, positive points, I guess, in the sense. But yeah, I love being here. And yeah, obviously the Rangers and Celtic as well. It has a weird kind of feeling on match day. You know, it has, I don't think many places can quite replicate an Old Firm derby. The kind of feeling in the city changes. You can feel it in the air. It's like when you feel a storm coming, it's the same kind of feeling. The air changes, you know, and it becomes very kind of eerie but intense. But yeah, that's generally a kind of overview of Glasgow. And yeah, if anyone is you know, coming to Scotland, visit Glasgow, hit me up, send me a message, yeah. And I'll help you around. And yeah,
for sure, Glasgow is definitely one of those places that I would love to visit one day. I've been to England so many times, but I've never made my way up there. But definitely on my bucket list of places to visit.
Yeah, okay. I hope you do that.
Before Marcin goes into part two, Jay sent over when you Google haggis, one of the top questions that comes up is, why is haggis illegal in the United States? And so in case anybody was curious, I decided to do a quick Google search. I don't know if this is still accurate. This was back in 2013. But apparently authentic Scottish haggis has been banned in the U.S. since 1971 because the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or the USDA as we know it, took a dim view of one of the key ingredients. Anyone want to guess? Maybe we should have Aiden go last on this one, but anyone want to guess which ingredient they took issue with?
Is it the intestines?
Close geographically in the body, I guess.
All right, we're getting very off topic.
You only get one guess, so Jay gets a guess.
I Googled it, so I know the answer.
Oh, okay, so yeah. Why don't you go ahead and give the answer then?
Right, so it's actually the sheep's lung. Because the ban encompasses all lungs, as fluids such as stomach acid and phlegm may enter the lung during slaughter, and that's the part that is banned.
Well, so in case you were wondering, and in case why you thought Aiden was saying that it might give you a little bit of sleep terrors, that is because it is quite a gruesome cuisine, but who doesn't want to try anything out? But anyway, I will throw it back to Marcin to get into part two. I just wanted to pepper that in there because we do food on this podcast.
All right. We've turned our boot camp into the food blog now. But
food camp.
Yeah, exactly. Food camp. That's going to be the next section of Top 10 Stock is food camp.
Oh, I'm here for it. But anyway, keep going. Yeah,
it's going to be essentially me talking about pierogi for 45 minutes. That's it. All right. So like Tim mentioned, thank you guys for giving your intros and giving us a little bit of a backdrop into where you guys from and giving us our listeners a little bit more detailed about you guys. What I want to do is now kind of shift this over into part two and talk more about boot culture, which is obviously why we're here, why we brought you guys on to chat about boot culture. So Jay and Aiden, obviously, I have the same question I'm going to ask for both of you, and we're just going to switch on and off. I'm going to start with Aiden this time because Jay started first the first time for the first question. So your first question is going to be, how has boot culture been influenced in a negative way?
When I've seen this question, you know, it's something that I don't know if it can ever be impacted in a negative way. I think it kind of goes, it's like a kind of fluid movement. It kind of goes between, you know, it does have kind of peaks and troughs, and it goes in and out. But I think something that I've seen, you know, over the last maybe couple of years is this sort of idea of just churning out boots and different colorways constantly, you know. I don't remember it when I was younger, but I didn't feel like there was that many colorways coming out like every like 2 months or a month. And I don't know, I just don't really see the need for it. I think if we're living in a world where, you know, we have to think about sustainability and you know, how much, you know, our impact has on the environment, you know, I don't really see the need for this constant just a constant kind of evolution of this, of different colors. So yeah, that's kind of one thing. And also I guess this kind of idea of jumping on a bandwagon, and you know, it seems like knitted boots were the thing and everyone raved and everyone made them. And then, you know, obviously there's reasons for it, you know, technology and the way that it's developed, people will latch on because it's popular and they want to make money. But I think that, you know, there's elements that where it's not needed, and companies can, you know, kind of go against the trend, but which I think we're starting to see slightly. I really like Mizuno or Stuck to Leather, you know, and they do that and that's their thing. But yeah, that's kind of what I've seen in a negative way, really, is those kind of two main points.
Cool. Okay, so I really appreciate that. So we're going to kick it off over to Jay. And Jay, we're going to give you the same exact question. How has boot culture been influenced in a negative way?
Right, I think Aiden's touched on most of the points I want to talk about, to be really honest.
All right, Jason.
and this is not me copping out, but I do agree that I think in general, there's just way too many colors, too many colorways that's coming out these days. And I mean, as someone who only buys boots to play in, I love it because, you know, just give it 3-4 months and the launch colorway have dropped in price to a large extent, right? And and that's great. What I don't like about the boot culture is how player boots are so tied to specific players right now. And even though thanks to Instagram, we now know that players do a lot more customizations on their boots. For example, the one customization that is on virtually every player is that they've got a more padded upper, and there's always almost always a layer of cushioning underneath it. And it drives me mad whenever brands like Nike and Adidas just you know, they constantly remove padding to give you a more barefoot touch. I think that was one of the key points they mentioned in the Vision 2. And then when you get a pair of De Bruyne's Visions and they're like, oh, there's extra padding inside. And I'm like, yeah, guys, it's one of the negatives of boot culture, in the sense that, you know, it's giving kids this, I wouldn't say negative impression, but it's the totally wrong impression, right, of boots. I mentioned earlier I coached kids, and some of them they run through boots like mad because they train 3 to 4 times a week. And I think after half a season, about 6 months, most of their boots break down. So I think and they often take quite a bit of time to break in. So I recommended one of them to try my Mizuno Morelia Neo 2s, right? The kid tried on, he loved it. But then he gave it back to me after like 2 weeks. He said, no, Mr. Chua, I really like the boots, but like the Mizuno, man, they just got no swag. Like, you don't see Ronaldo wearing it. and to me, that's like probably the biggest negative to me in terms of boot culture, because, like, you know, he liked how it felt, he liked how it performed, he loved the comfort, And I did find him sneaking my pair to use throughout the entire tournament. They were playing in for a month. Yeah, but like just because, you know, Nike's not doing it, Ronaldo's not wearing it, they're like, you know, yeah, that's not for me. So I think if anything, apart from, you know, the numerous number of colorways that they're coming out, for me, that the whole branding thing is the biggest negative for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I've definitely heard that before when I played football, people just buying boots because a certain player or somebody they've seen wear it. So I definitely agree with that point. But I think we've had enough negative for one podcast. So I think I'm going to shift it over to positive thoughts. So now I'm going to start with Jay this time. So the first question is going to be to you. So how has boot culture been influenced in a positive way? Let's flip the script.
I think it... Well, one of the good things about having very short cycles between boots is that you do get quite a bit of innovation here and there, right? So we've seen brands like Adidas come up with Fusion Skin, which is a new way to treat leather. And I think that, of course, Nike's got their Flyknit, which they've done so much wonderful stuff with it. I think the one positive in that sense has been we've managed to see a lot more innovation coming out in the last 10 years than I would argue in the previous 10 years before, right, where it was just how much plastic or how much rubber could we slap on a boot before people got annoyed at it, right? One of the other things that I do hope boot culture is able to influence moving forward is I love the whole Black History Month thing that Nike does. And I do hope that brands do take the opportunity to capitalize on hype, of course, but at the same time, tell a proper story, because we know that brands are really good at branding, right? Marketing is their strength. You know, if they can use this opportunity to talk more about, you know, minorities, and even for example, I was really annoyed when whenever Nike releases a signature women's colorway, they launch it in like 100 pairs, and then there's like barely any marketing. I think Megan Rapinoe got like her own pair, and there was no marketing again. Sam Kerr was part of the Dream Speed, no marketing about her. I do think that I do hope that, you know, brands start to capitalize on this with their branding power, their marketing power, to just bring up these stories. So, you know, let's not just have it all in doom and gloom of like trying to sell as many boots as possible. You know, let's sell those boots as well. But at the same time, let's also bring up stories of these people who may not have been in the same limelight, who deserve to be there, of course.
Yeah, 100% agreed. Yeah, that's something I would definitely like to see a lot of boot companies do moving forward, especially with everything that's been going on. Aiden, I'm going to kick off the same question over to you. How has boot culture been influenced in a positive light?
Yeah, I think Jason touched on a good point, was that, you know, there needs to be this kind of focus, I guess, on these elements you're talking about, with, like, you know, things like Sam Kerr and their boots. You know, these things should be pushed further. One thing I've thought that's been quite nice is I kind of like the kind of uprise of the smaller brands, and maybe even recent months, maybe not recent years, you know, things like Mizuno that we spoke about previously, but even New Balance, Lotto, Umbro, I still think these brands are producing, you know, really top quality boots. Some are, you know, Jason might have an opinion on the Kuro 3s, and, you know, yeah, you know, there's a couple of FA boots, but, you know, on the whole, I think that, you know, we're starting to see a much broader range of possibilities and selection that you can pick from now across the board. And yeah, it kind of goes back to that point where, you know, are they putting out too many? I don't think they're putting out too many different models. I think it's about too many different colors. But in terms of the models, I think they're getting it right. You know, Adidas is maybe went a wee bit weird with the, you know, 19 plus, 20 plus, there's no real difference. But across all other brands, I think there's a good kind of evolution. And I think things like Nike right now are on a really good path in terms of evolution. I think we're going to see some new drops soon. The GT Pro, I think it's called, or I can't remember the exact name, but yeah, I think that kind of aspect of being able to find something that's as good as or maybe better than Nike, Adidas, and Puma from a smaller brand like Mizuno, Umbro, etc. It's quite an exciting thing because, you know, these guys have teams and, you know, tens and tens of designers and engineers and, you know, I think it's just a really interesting time. And I think it's just it's kind of a sort of shift change right now we're seeing a little bit. And it might be one that, you know, that allows other companies to just kind of break away and make a name for themselves. So I think that's probably the most positive thing I've seen. I think that's really it for just now, you know.
Cool. And yeah, like, we're gonna hold our thoughts on Mizuno because we're gonna have a little section about them in a bit. I'm gonna transition this therapy session back over to Tim because Tim has some questions he's gonna ask. So I'm gonna get
Dr. Tim, please. Thank you. So in all seriousness, we're running into, and you can't talk boots and you can't talk boot culture without talking about marketing and how it's positively and negatively impacting. And that's kind of speaking to what we were just talking about in the way that you guys were approaching it. Now, there is something that we were actually talking about as a group, boots, you know, the Boots Society. I'll whisper it because we don't really want everybody to know who we are. But as far as it goes, we are in a situation where we do see, and just as Jay was saying, a lot for the clout. We see young players wearing takedowns of modern boots, of this year's boots. They'll wear a takedown as opposed to wearing a top tier boot that you can get on clearance from 5 years ago. As an example, just, you know, of course, I just picked a random number there. You know, are we buying too much into the marketing? Or does the tech on the new boots justify paying more for a current takedown, maybe a Vapor Pro as an example, as opposed to a top end model from 5 years ago? Now, I believe we're going to have Aiden go first on this one. I think Jay went first last time. Is that right? I'm zoning out on my own podcast. This is go ahead, Aiden.
So, okay, this is like a kind of tough question. It depends who you talk to, I think. For this question, I think if you ask the younger generation, they will take a newer model that's a takedown at the same price because it's about what Jay spoke about. It's about the hype. It's about, you know, having that Nike logo, having that Adidas logo, you know, being one of the ones with the new boots, the new colors. But for me, you know, 100%, the people buy into the hype. And then the marketing is brilliant. You have to give it to the companies. They are insanely good at shifting off a boot that probably should sell for, you know, I'm going to use British pounds, but like 60, 70 British pounds, and they're selling it for 140 for a takedown model, which to me, that was what a top model was when I was, you know, 8. And it just seems crazy now. So I would always, if anyone's listening to this, I would always go for the top line model that's an older version than a takedown, because I think the takedowns are much better than they were 10 years ago. You know, I think of like Vapor Pro and the, you know, what was the one I had in my head? Can't remember, but, you know, point is that, no, yeah, sorry, the new Predator 0.2s. They are both really good boots, I'd say. I don't, you know, Jason will know more about the fit and the feel. I haven't tested them out, but from what I've heard, they're much closer to the top line than you would have seen 10 years ago, I think. You know, maybe that was just maybe marketing 10 years ago that I think that they were further away. I don't know. Maybe I bought into the system and I have no idea. I'm just I'm a sucker for it. But yeah, I don't know. Top line model for me, you know, you can find some really great deals. And I think you get more for your money from a top line from 5 years ago than you do a brand new model that's a takedown today, in my opinion.
Okay, well, I'm curious to hear you know, the man that gleed. He was so happy when he heard the negative impact of boot culture and marketing. And then he kind of hesitated when it came to the positive piece. Jay, I got to get your 2 cents on this as well. You know, being, and we were just talking about hype as well, being somebody that writes in boot hype, you're very privy to this as well. So why don't you give your 2 cents?
Yeah. So let me bring a different perspective to this, right? Because I have spoken to Andrew, who used to work at some retail stores, mm-hmm. as well as some people in Adidas and Nike. So I think when we think of people who are buying boots, right? So I think there are several categories of people we should be looking at. So of course, there are the hype people who are just going for like the latest and the blingers and the flashiest ones. And you've got the middle ground where, like, you know, of course, they're a bit more price sensitive. At the same time, they're a bit more aware of like what they want to get. And of course, you have the last ones where, you know, people who just want the best deals. So like, even if it's a much older model, if that comes in at a great price, they'll take it over. Right. But what I've seen as well, whenever I go to stores is sometimes the kids just bring their parents along, right? And then sure, the kid can say, oh, I want a boot that's like, you know, 3-4 years ago because it's much cheaper. And I mean, most parents would say, no, let's just get a newer boot because an older boot would be less durable. And in that sense, the kids get talked out of it. And of course, because of the budget, they go for the middle ground, the middle boot. So I think to some extent, of course, the tech does justify paying more. And if I were to recommend people, definitely an older model that is an older model is nearly always better than a takedown model. But at the same time, I also recognize that brands are catering to people who are looking at different price points. The $300 price point, the $150 and the $80 price point. And sometimes people just go for that because newer is, you know, the glue is better, that sort of thing. So, yeah. Sorry, got a bit confused there.
It's all right. It's late where you're at. We keep forgetting this. You know, we're all starting our days over here. And you're winding down a Saturday night over in Singapore. So if you zone out, at least in my book, you're okay. I have no problem with it. So, you know, so we do, and actually I would probably venture to say that Marcin and myself would probably agree to certain extents with a lot of the points that you guys are throwing in there. However, for the sake of time and for the sake of an important talking point, Mizuno, we were talking about, and Aiden had said, you know, I really respect how, you know, they stick to what they know. They stick to crafting beautiful boots, and this is what they are exceptional at. However, they've jumped into the knitted game with the new beta that they've dropped, right? So what I figure we could do here is we're going to look at Mizuno at a capacity of, A, what do we think they have to do to break into the top three? And B, let's talk beta. What do we think that is that going to be a marketable boot for them? Is that them trying to step into the limelight? You know, because right now, and again, we always talk big three here. We're really talking Nike, Adidas, and Puma, because typically speaking, those are the ones that are marketing and getting all the hype as far as their boots are. So let's start with Jay on this one. It actually worked out. I didn't mean to start with you on this one. We were just kind of rotating around. So this is a pretty good chance. So Jay, why don't you give us your impression? First, what do they have to do to break into the big three? Do they want to? They're huge in Asia. You know, and as far as it goes as well, what do we think of the beta? Let's discuss.
Right. Okay, so the short answer of it all, for them to break it into big three, they got to take the cash. They just got to splash the cash. You know, get a number of big name players. You know, even up-and-coming rising stars, you know, get Trent in. I'm surprised they didn't throw the money at Tony Kors to get in. Because he's a big fan of white leather boots, and that's what Mizuno are all about. Yeah, so I mean, I think it's about getting eyeballs out there. At the same time, I do think that it's much more difficult period of time now to break into the big three. from how I see it, there was an inflection point where things got a lot more difficult for brands, and that was around 2012. So 2012 was around a period where Nike and Adidas actually stepped up their game in terms of synthetic leather. So we saw the CTR Mystery 3, which had an amazing Kanga light, and I got fooled into thinking it was leather as well. And I think once it hit 2014, the Adi Zero had the Hybrid Touch upper, which was very, very leather-like as well. So I think those two, that sort of changed the game. And of course, when Flyknit came about, leather had been pushed back, right? So consumers did not look at leather the same way. And I think it's really important as well. It's a bit blasphemous for me to talk about it this way. But at the end of the day, we need to think of leather as just the skin, right? Leather is the skin, and everything else underneath it is what really counts. So how most leather boots are made, and what the reason why leather was chosen at first was because it stretched easily, right? Previously, they were using materials were not as advanced, and you know, it was hard, it was uncomfortable. The reason why I used leather was because it stretched. Most leather boots have a layer of foam underneath it and a backing underneath, right? But these days, the minute brands were able to get that skin out, right? So for example, now with knit, it performs similarly to what leather was supposed to do, right? As long as it's protective enough, you throw in a layer of plastic on it to make sure that it's durable, and you kind of have what a leather boot does. You can kind of match a leather boot if you put it in a foam, right? We saw it with the Vision ones, which are fairly comfortable and you got a pretty nice touch. I think the old Azero Prime Knit was the one that Suarez wore was pretty comfortable as well. The A16.1 Prime Knit was probably where I saw as a knit leather boot in that sense, where it was really comfortable, had a nice padded touch. So in that sense, I do think that it's very, very difficult for smaller brands to break in because the odds are stacked against them, right? Material-wise, if they don't have knit, that's half the battle lost because consumers don't look at it the same way, which is why every brand now has a knit option. Number two, marketing is not on their side as well. So, which leads me to mention why I think Mizuno has come up with knit on the betas, because I think in this day and age, if you don't have a one-piece upper on your speed boot that gives you a really, really solid lockdown, or at least feels like you have a more solid lockdown, it's pretty hard to compete on that level. Yep.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah, so that's the great take on it, is that it's not just the marketing, it's the material, and it's who you get to represent your boots. And that's a pretty good thorough analysis as far as it goes. And so I'm gonna throw it, I know, in full discussion, I know you're not as into Mizuno. Even if you want to talk on a design standpoint, however you want to address it, please feel free to throw your two cents in there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so the thing is, I love what Mizuno do. I think, you know, you proposed a thing there saying, you know, does Mizuno even want to be one of the top brands? And I don't know if they do. I don't think they need to be. I think that's the problem. You know, you've got Nike, Adidas, and Puma, and you know they're doing their thing and they're at the top. And I think Mizuno are doing their thing with leather that's much easier than you know, they're just doing a better version of leather boots than all the top brands are doing. They're trying to innovate and create, you know, the highest grade, the highest spec, you know, pushing evolution, you know, pushing technology. Yeah. So I think you would probably need something like Jason said, when you're off, just stand up.
We might be losing Aiden a little bit there. I think we might be losing you a bit. You broke up a little bit on that one. Try it again.
Getting major feedback.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's when we put in that like technical difficulty sign. With, like, you know what I mean? So here's what we'll do is we will jump onto, we will let Aiden catch himself real quick, and we will jump forward onto, will small brands make their way into the light, and we'll lead with Jay on this one. So Jay, if you want to give as much time to Aiden to correct his audio as possible, is time to cut wild.
Yeah, so I think this is a really interesting topic, right? Because we, in our boot Instagram chat couple of weeks back, you know, we kind of discussed whether or not smaller brands need to do something more unique, right? And I think we had this big discussion, and the point I really threw out to everyone was that, you know, when was the last time a small brand did something unique and people actually caught on to it? And I don't think that, I think without the strength of marketing behind it, it's very, very difficult for a small brand to really have that sort of stickiness in people's minds. And here's why, right? Do many of you remember which was the first brand to do like a leather cage system?
It wasn't Puma, because that would be too easy. Because that would be way too easy.
Right.
You gotta give it to me.
I think most people think of it as the Tiempo Legend 6.
Okay.
The ones that Tortie had, that nice gold Torties. What actually happened was that the 11 Pro 3s came out just before it, and they were the ones, Adidas were the ones who pioneered that leather cage thing. The problem was it wasn't terribly well done, and when Nike came out with the Legend 6, they did like an incredible job with marketing, and boom, everyone thinks of the leather cage as being something that Nike did. So I think it's very easy for smaller brands to sort of get, you know, so I think it's a dilemma for them, right? Do they follow what the bigger brands have done and do like a poor man's version of it, like what we've seen with the tequila trees as well as the Lotto laceless models? Not that they are poorer versions of it, but they look pretty similar, and to a consumer, you're going to think of them as copying Adidas, right? So do they go down that route and try and, you know, sweep up anyone who Adidas misses? Or do they try for something new and risk that, you know, consumers think that, oh, this is way too strange and, right, and out of my league? Yeah, so I think it's really tough for small brands, but and I genuinely don't think that small brands will be able to make their way to make it into Big Four without really, really, really substantial amount of money pumped into it. We've seen Under Armour come and give it a real solid go at it with the Clutch Fit, with their zipper boot and all that, but nothing seems to stick. I do hope their latest Clutch Fit Ghost or something works out, but as it is, I'm not hopeful.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, like you said before, you know, after all this innovation has happened, it's become really hard for anybody to break into there, because it's inherently, and actually Aiden even said it before, it's inherently a marketing game at this point. So it's just, how much money can you really throw at it? And if you're a small brand, usually your budget's not really that high in the first place. So Aiden, why don't you go ahead and throw your two cents in here? I think we have you back, I'm pretty sure. So let's give it a go.
Okay, I think I'm back now. I was talking absolute gibberish before, because I was hearing like five versions of myself, and I couldn't think, you know. I was trying to talk about how Mizuno was, you know, brilliant, they didn't need to break in, but, you know, after myself telling myself five times, it started to become quite confusing. But yeah, in terms of, so we're just to confirm, we're on the small brands making their way into the limelight. Yes,
we are there. Yeah.
Okay. I'm back on track. Okay. So yeah, I completely agree with Jason. I think it's similar to what we were talking about, with like Mizuno and what it will take, you know. I think it's almost, you know, I think it will happen. I think it will happen at some point. I just don't know when or how. And I think it might, you know, I'm talking maybe 50 years, you know. I don't really know. I think there has to be something somewhere that just makes a slight, you know, just, you know, a little indent in Adidas and Nike and Puma. And I don't even think, you know, if you look at brands, you know, I honestly believe that if you look at Mizuno or even Umbro, you know, I think Umbro are producing some great stuff. They, you know.
We lost Aiden again. And it was just at the epitome of like a wonderful statement. It was, the hype was building so much on that statement. All we heard was Umbro and Mizuno do wonderful things. And no, we still can't hear you. Oh no. I blame Glasgow for having poor reception. I think that's really the issue.
Yeah, the issue with the four of us doing this podcast. So for those of you that don't know, we have somebody from Glasgow, from Singapore, and then it's all three different connections that we're trying to hook up essentially. So sometimes we run into technical difficulties.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you want me to finish what I was saying?
The interest was building. It was such a build-up.
I was trying to build up to like the ultimate point, and you know, it never came.
The hype was burning.
Essentially, you know, what I was trying to say was Umbro, Mizuno, you know, all of these kind of brands, even New Balance now, I think, are creating things that, you know, are better than Puma. I think the only thing it comes down to is marketing. You know, Puma have Suarez and Griezmann and whoever else, and I think that's the struggle for these brands, is that I don't think it's really the quality of the product. It's all down to the marketing. And I think to get that now, it will take a lot. But I think something is going to have to give, you know, something has to crumble. And I think the first brand we'll see crumble is Puma. Really, I think that they will be the first ones to go and someone else will take their place.
I think it's bold of you to assume we'll be around for 50 years. I think... Wow. No apocalyptic jokes for anybody. That's all right. We'll hold off on it. 2020's been rough. Jay, did you want to throw something in on that? It looked like you were getting ready to say something.
Yeah. So I wanted to agree with Aiden in the sense that, I mean, if you look at all the boots that are on discounts right now, the deep discounted ones are all on Puma. Puma. In Singapore, I think Puma's boots are like $129. Singapore dollar, so I think that's like 100 USD and or I think maybe 90 USD, which is like dirt cheap for like the latest future models. And I'm not even sure if I'll put Puma as like a big three anymore, because I think I mean, looking at the sales and how they've been doing, it's quite worrying to some extent. Yeah,
they might be the new Under Armour.
Oh no. Hey, I wear Puma boots all the time, okay? Actually, full discretion, you guys know this, I went on ProDirect site, and for 25 euros, you could actually end up getting pretty much every one of their top line models from 5 years ago. Yeah. And I've been enjoying the Evo Speed 1.5s with the AG plate. Pretty good stuff that they got going on there. But as far as we go here, Aiden, since you are fixed now, we will go ahead and move on to what tech do we want/predict will be going on in the future.
So this is you've got me back on the question that, you know, I don't have too much to give on this one. I mean, no, to be fair, you know, I think, you know, I always find it really hard to predict technology because I don't believe in it. You know, I don't believe that, you know, there's so much stuff going on about, there's so many brands doing things that, it's great to see innovation, and I love to see it. I don't want it to stop, but I don't believe in it. I don't believe that makes you a better player. I think if you can find a boot that fits you right, it doesn't matter what they tell you it does. If it does what you think it should do and it fits you well, you know, that is what all you need. You don't need, you know, a carbon fiber sole plate, and you don't need, you know, you don't need an aggressive stud pattern, and you don't need the I don't even know what aero track technology or whatever they try and tell you. I don't think it works.
Well, I mean, you know, as far as it goes, you don't believe in technology, and I don't think the technology believes in you either, because it cut you out like six times during this recording.
well, I mean, Maybe that's karma. Maybe that's karma.
No, well, how about this? How about from a design standpoint?
Yeah.
What do you see? Because I know that's really where your focus is, and I know that's how you end up getting these shots. I saw you post up on Umbro's. It's funny because is it the Acuro? Is that how you pronounce it? I saw you post up their model, and it's funny because aesthetically speaking, it's a very nice boot to look at. Yeah, however, definitely. There are a lot of complaints on the practicality of it, on the narrowness of the fit.
Yeah.
You know, so on that though, you know, it's funny because, yeah, as far as designs go, Umbro has been doing a really good job.
Like, yeah. You know? No, Umbro is honestly, I truly believe Umbro makes some of the most aesthetically pleasing boots on the market. I really do. I think the Curo looks, you know, the Curo and the Medusa and, you know, they all look better than what Nike and Adidas are putting out just now. You know, the Uniforia pack from Adidas was pretty nice, but in terms of just the general style of boots, I think Umbro has nailed it. And the one thing you talked about though was the technology, and I think that is the problem, is that, you know, something like that D30 padding, I really don't like. It gives such a muted feel on the ball. I think in terms of just design in general though, I think what we might see is I don't know, I feel like there is some, I'd love to see power boots back. I love that idea. I'm going back to the thing, they don't make you shoot better, harder, faster, more accurate, whatever you want to say, but they've just, is a nice concept. It's more of a psychological thing. And I think we might see something like going back to the tunic. I think there's this thing that people really care about the environment. People think, you know, they're more kind of wary of what they're doing, what they're buying, what that means to the environment. I think something modular that that allows people to have boots that last 10 years, you know, okay, maybe not 10 years, maybe a couple of years longer than they normally would, then that might be something. And also I think this idea of being 3D printing boots, you know, it might be able to, you know, if we can 3D print houses, we can 3D print boots. And yeah, it might take Nike ID to a whole different level where you Nike ID a boot and you print it in your house. You know, I think stuff like that, you know, it's not, you know, I'm literally just making this up, you know, this may never happen, but it's, yeah, I think things like that might happen. Super interesting. Yeah, I'd love it to happen. I'd love to print a football boot in my house. You know, who wouldn't?
Yeah, yeah, and that's actually something really interesting that got brought up, because I feel a couple of us were talking about that, where it was, you know, maybe the future isn't that you go to a store and grab your boot. Maybe the future is that you get some kind of access code and you do it, which is really great. So that being said, let's move on to the last question here, and I'm going to throw this over to Marcin and have him ask this one over, and then maybe closes out, and then if Aiden's camera survives, that would be great. I don't even know.
I don't know. I can't promise anything, though.
It's okay. It happens sometimes. So the last question that we have in terms of part three is, what brands will we see be able to break into that big three's like dominance in the coming years? So, like, I know we kind of touched upon the subject a little bit earlier before, but is there any company you can kind of see like being like, hey, we want to make a push and try to knock off one of those topper, like bigger companies like Puma, like Adi, like Nike? I'm going to kick Aiden. You can lead us off with this one.
Yeah, you know, I think we touched on it before, but, you know, I feel like Umbro is one of those brands that has something up their sleeve. They have.
If you don't get a sponsorship by Umbro by the end of this podcast, I swear I'm going to write a letter.
I'm pushing for that. You know, they commented on my post today, Umbro USA. So all I need now is them to watch this, and then they're like, okay, let's give this guy a sponsorship. Come on, guys. Only need a couple of colorways. I think Umbro got something up their sleeve. They're always kind of a brand that is always under the radar. And I think that, you know, they just need one kind of little bit. I feel like they're 95% there, and they just keep getting the 5% wrong. if they can get that 5% right, I think, you know, that might do it for them. But one other, you know, I've always had a funny feeling about Under Armour as well. I know I spoke about them and I said, you know, Puma will be the new Under Armour. But, you know, Under Armour, you know, tried to do things, came away, came back with something slightly better, and then kind of ruined it again for themselves. And then now they're kind of going away again. And I think they might be on the third time lucky. They may be able to get the third lucky streak, and they might be able to come back with something that is just, you know, incredible. I don't know. I'm just, you know, throwing that kind of thought out there. That's potentially, and obviously Mizuno is the one that probably most people would say would be the kind of next one to break in, just because of, you know, how popular they are in Asia, and, you know, how you know, just the sheer quality of their boots. But yeah, I don't know. I'd love to see Umbro and Under Armour, you know, maybe just come in.
Cool. Well, thank you for that. Yeah, there's definitely a ton of different brands that are going to try to fight for that, those top three spots, if you want to call it, with Nike, Adi, and Puma. Jay, do you have any thoughts of any of those, of any other brands that can kind of sneak in and kind of break into that top three of football boots today?
Yeah, so not to be the contrarian here, but in all honesty, I think the brand that will break the big three or the big two, as we've talked about, is not one that's been created yet. In the same way how Apple destroyed the smartphone industry, basically they destroyed the phone industry and created a smartphone industry. I think, and this is a little bit tied to the tech that we predict in the future, right? I think that the future of football boots is one that is customized to your feet. And as Aiden mentioned earlier with 3D printing, I think it's a bit strange that we haven't been able to 3D print an outsole, which creates the shape of the boot, right? And so I think with enough, with a number of pictures of your feet, perhaps some drawings, I'm sure a company could 3D print an outsole for you. And then the upper is just a simple leather upper. You know, you could just get that easily from somewhere in China. Or, like, you know, with knit being more and more common these days, I'm sure there are factories who could be doing it. So I honestly see a brand like, say, Tesla, not, or like someone along those lines coming to really disrupt the entire industry. And this was sort of me, I'm getting a bit inspired by Tim, right? Because I think a couple of weeks back, Tim was, you know, pulling boots apart, trying to change outsoles. And all those cool stuff. And to me, I think that's something that, you know, brands should start looking into. You know, how can we customize the fit for the consumers? And I think that any brand who can do that next is going to change the game. And so here's me, fingers crossed, in 5 years' time, you know, someone comes up or someone hears this podcast and says, hey, you know, I can do this. And boom, he changes the game.
It's funny you said that, Jason, because on my pre-podcast notes, right down at the bottom, you know, I talked about, I said, I think Mizuno will struggle with only being leather. And then right at the end, I said, and maybe it might be a brand that isn't even created yet. Who knows? So, you know, I should have probably put that in. But yeah.
That's... Oh, yeah, I'm sure you put that in. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Uh huh.
Yeah, obviously I did, you know.
In 5 years, I'll be wearing Tesla Super Speed ones.
You never know. You never know.
All right, well, that kind of concludes and wraps up this episode of Bootcamp. I obviously want to thank Aiden and Jay coming in onto this episode and kind of joining us and giving us your thoughts about boots now and the future of boots. I'm going to let you guys sign yourselves off first. You guys can mention any kind of places to follow you at or anything along those lines. So Jay, sign us out for yourself, please.
Right. Again, thanks a lot, Marcin and Tim, for having myself on the podcast. Really nice to see everyone in person, as well as Aiden for the first time. I'm a huge fan of his stuff on Instagram, definitely. For myself, you can follow us on at BootHypeOfficial, or you can find us on boothype.com, where we review football boots. I think the beta reviews as well as the Neo 3 reviews are coming up very soon. So if you've been excited by our discussion on this, you can check them out on our website.
Cool. Thank you. We really appreciated having you on and giving us some of your thoughts and ideas about boot culture. Aiden, please sign us out.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a pleasure being on. You know, hopefully I'm back on at some other point. But it's been really fun. And yeah, you can follow me on AOF Cleats. You can also follow, you know, me. Just my design account is also tagged on that. So if you know, shout out to Umbro if you need me, get me on there. yeah, I'll just be waiting for the new Acuro colorway to come through my door. But yeah, been massive pleasure to be on, and yeah, great to talk to you guys.
Awesome. Well, like I said, thank you for both of you guys sincerely for joining us for this episode. And then last but not least, let me hand it over to my co-host, Tim, to sign us out also.
So thanks again, not only to our guests, but also to anybody who's managed to listen through the entire episode podcast-wise. I'm being shown a cleat right now, which is being blurred out. It's kind of funny. We have a censorship thing going here. But anyway, so again, thank you all for listening. Thank you know, follower wise, we always appreciate everybody. I'm Tim Camaraj at Footy Coogee signing out, throwing it back to Marson.
Yeah, so thank you guys again for tuning in for another episode of Boot Camp. You can always follow me at PLU Ventino on Twitter. You can follow us, the Top Bins page on Twitter, also at Top Bins Talk _, or follow us on Instagram, which we're making a huge push on lately, at Top Bins Talk on Instagram. Obviously, the podcast is called Top Bins Talk on Spotify and on iTunes, so give it a listen. If you guys want to chat with any of us, please leave any comments, feedback, anything else like that. Or if you ever want to be on a future episode, please shoot us a message. I'm always down to talk to anybody. But until the next episode, we're out. Peace.
Peace.
Cheers, guys.